This is Danny and Gallant, live from Peoria all this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Seahawks are in Indianapolis, and it sounds like their eyes are wide open. They might be a little bit worried about how much their checkbook is going to be impacted, but Paul, we heard Pete Carroll on with John Clayton, and he mentioned the fact that they certainly have, they've got a shopping list that is starting to take shape. Here he is, Pete Carroll in cut number one, talking about there might be six, seven guys that they're looking at this time of year.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half a dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to a club and could help us. And so, you know, we'll just have to see how it sorts out.
He did talk a little bit earlier about how they are trying to bring back Jadeveon Clowney. He's been asked about that a lot. But every single time we hear these guys answer a question, Danny, it does feel more and more like they are exploring all different alternatives. My hope is that this is part of some ploy that he and John Schneider are putting on to maybe make it seem as if they're not that interested in Jadeveon Clowney, but that's not the approach you necessarily want to have either. I think they're nervous they're going to lose him, and I'm curious as to what approach they're going to go if that's what they feel like they have to do, go after a couple of veteran pass rushers.
When I hear that, it makes me think, believe, and recognize they're not going to take the blank check approach. They are not headed into free agency with the idea that, above all else, we're going to retain Jadeveon Clowney. They want him back. They hope they get him back. He is their top priority. But there is a price that if it gets that high, they're not going to go to. And I think that probably that helps their bargaining in some ways, is that they're going to present it to Jadeveon that, hey, if you want to play here, this is what you're going to play at. And it might be that we're not going to give you the most money of anybody out there. We want him back. We think he fits. This is what the value has. But they can't put themselves in a position where, you know what, above all else, we're retaining Jadeveon Clowney, because if they don't get him, and if it does go to a price they're not going to go to, they're going to have to find alternatives.
There's a post I made for 710 Sports a couple of weeks ago, 710sports.com, and I compared all the cap situations for teams that are going into free agency. There aren't a lot of good teams that have a lot of cap space that could potentially add Jadeveon Clowney and make some other moves. And that is my big hope, is that Clowney realizes, okay, well, maybe they can't give me just as much as I want, but if he wants to play on a contending team, good luck finding a team that actually has the quarterback situation that this one does. Because the rest of the teams that are up there in cap space, it's like Buffalo, it's Indianapolis, it's teams that definitely have question marks, giant question marks at quarterback, even if the rest of the roster is competitive. That's really the only hope that I have right now for bringing him back.
Would you start negative recruiting at this point?
100%.
If you're John Schneider.
Look at Josh Allen. Jacoby Brissett. We don't even know his last name.
It is. I am encouraged, because one of the things that Jadeveon Clowney has repeatedly said is how much he valued Russell Wilson as a quarterback, how much Russell's presence was part of the reason that he decided that Seattle was a place that he wanted to go and play. I certainly don't think the possibility or the door is closed. I just think that it's clear there's a lot of things that are in motion here, and we may or may not see him coming back. Pete also talked about that, look, they're trying to, above all else, make additions to this team, and that includes the fact that their checkbook, they might be a little bit short-stacked in this free agency. Here he is in cut number two.
You know, the big questions everybody's asked about JD and asked about Jay Reid and what's going to happen there and the acquisition of Greg Olsen is something that's special for us. And so there's a lot happening. I mean, I don't know if I can zero in on what's going to take place there. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to add to this team. We know we were really close last year with a chance to be a championship club. And it's exciting to know that we're that close with a couple spots, and we have some room that we can work with in the cap. Some. Not a lot, but some. That'll go fast. But all of that, you know, leads us to opportunity now. So the draft is a big-time opportunity to help our club.
This is different than what he said in previous years. This is different in the sense that in previous years I felt like a lot of what he's talked about is the desire to maintain the group they have. And it feels like this year there's less of an emphasis on that, and more of an emphasis on the idea that they do have an opportunity to make additions, that they have a chance to get a couple pieces that will help put them over the top, that they were close last year, and in much the same way in 2013 that they were able to make a couple of additions in free agency that made a huge difference with Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril. I think very much he sees this team in a similar position.
But he says a couple, and he's very careful to point out that they don't have that much cap space, and that makes me wonder just how careful are they going to be when it comes to whatever theoretical players that they do add, because they will add, I would imagine, one or two at the very least. Maybe Greg Olsen was one of the two.
Yeah, I do think he was.
So that means, okay, maybe there's just one other addition, and then that goes back to a team that was 11-5 during the regular season last year, won its first playoff game, was pretty close to at least getting back in the picture for the second playoff game, until obviously they were not able to stop Aaron Rodgers on a pair of third and longs. Do they look at what they currently have and say, you know what, the jump from year one to year two is going to make a big difference? And I think that they believe that too. And I'm curious if that's going to be correct, if their belief in Ugo Amadi as the nickelback player, or on top of that, at defensive line, if LJ Collier is someone that they believe can make that next step, or just be a guy who's a factor at all whatsoever. Marquise Blair, same thing. Injury at the beginning of the year, injury going into the playoffs too. If those guys are going to have the kind of impact, they seem to be implying that those guys will have a bigger impact next season, and you better hope that that's correct.
Growth from within.
Right.
I take that with a grain of salt, because yes, injuries impacted him, and Marquise Blair having an ankle, and LJ Collier had a difficult season. But this isn't a matter of if this team gets those two players back and contributing at a high level, that's going to put them over the top. LJ Collier is a great, his upside is that he is a tough, combative, great, sort of feisty player. Like he is not going to be that quick twitch edge rusher. That really, really valuable piece. I think realistically, Paul, they can add one starting free agent if they re-sign both Jadeveon Clowney and Jaron Reed. If they get both of those guys back, I think they've got room to sign one additional starter as a free agent. And then the rest of it, I think, is going to have to come from the draft or what they use their draft picks to acquire.
Who do you think is going to be more difficult to convince to jump back in?
I think it's Clowney, because I think Reed's the sales pitch is actually going to be fairly straightforward. I think he is not going to get the offer he wants. If he signs in the first 2 days, terrible news for Seattle, because it means that someone else ponied up for him. I don't think he's going to get the offer he wants, and I think he's going to come back to Seattle on a 1 or 2 year contract.
I think the pitch for Clowney's easier. I really do. I understand that you're looking at the financial ramifications of giving him a big time contract, but he knows what it is to be here. He knows that this is a better team than any of the other teams that he wants to play for. He says he doesn't want to play for any bleep teams out there. Where Jaron Reed, I mean, when he was even broached with the idea of playing at a pretty reasonable contract.
$8 to $10 million?
Right. He was like, no, that's
disrespectfully
low. That's disrespect. And I think that it's going to take some time, perhaps, for him to realize that that's not a realistic offer that he is going to get anything more than. And if that's the case, I think you're going to have to be very patient and hope that no one makes that kind of offer to a guy that had that season with 10.5 sacks.
Yes, I completely agree with you. You are going to have to wait. But in that case, I think the market's going to help you. I think the market's actually going to help you, because I don't think he's going to get that offer. He's someone who has 1 year of good pass rush, and he's been primarily a run stopper. And what we've seen is interior defensive tackles with that sort of makeup, it's very easy for them to get between $6, $7 million, $8 million even. But getting up toward $10 million is incredibly hard unless you have consistent pass rush stats, and he has 1 year of pass rush.
I think a team can talk itself, though, into the idea of a second round pick having a season where he had 10.5 sacks as that being something that can replicate, especially when he had the 6-game suspension at the beginning of the year. I don't know how much of an excuse that should be for the fact that he was not able to take advantage of all the double teams and triple teams Jadeveon Clowney was getting, and I'm sure that these teams that are looking at him are watching all the film and they are wondering, okay, well, why wasn't he able to take advantage of all of that? But at the same time, teams love to trick themselves into believing that they can make a guy who has been good at least one season in the past into being that guy going forward. I think one team is going to do that with Jaron Reed, and I think if that's the case, I don't think the Seahawks should bother matching.
Maybe. I would agree with you. I don't think the Seahawks should bother matching. Where I think the market could work to help Seattle with Jaron Reed, I think the market's going to end up hurting with Jadeveon Clowney, because I think that when you have top-tier free agents like that, it's very likely to see a bidding war happen with that. And then once that starts happening, I'm not sure how high Seattle's going to be willing to go. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to have an interview that we're really excited about. Julio Rodriguez, who is one of the Mariners' top prospects, along with Jared Kelnick. He's going to be joining us at 7:30. We'll also talk to Kyle Lewis today. But right now, it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Two in a row. Juggernaut. Mariners win their second straight Cactus League game. That's right. Big news coming out of this one is you had Justin Dunn pitching a couple innings. He looked very good. A couple hits, one run. And the Mariners win 5-2 over the Cincinnati Reds.
I want him to crack the starting rotation. I don't know if that's realistic, but I'd like to see another young arm in there and just see what he can do the first couple of months of the season. See if he sinks, see if he swims. We like him. We've had conversations with him over the last couple of days while he's been out here. I'm wondering if that's realistic. I'm wondering if that's something that we actually could see happening, Danny.
I wouldn't expect it. Well, it'd be interesting. Does he start in Tacoma, where pitchers tend to get hammered?
That's not a good place for anyone to pitch.
PCL is dangerous. It's very, very difficult.
Destroy your confidence.
We'll see if he comes there. I don't think he'll start with the Major League club. I think he'll be here sooner rather than later, however.
What to watch for.
Okay, so we're still trying to figure out what the heck's going on between the NFL, the NFL Players Association, but the NFL Players Association is going to vote on the proposed collective bargaining agreement. The vote from the executive committee changed from 6-5 against the proposed CBA to 7-4 against the CBA for the NFL Players Association committee. I know this is sounding very confusing as I'm explaining it. The vote from the 32 player reps was a little bit closer, though. It was 17-14 with one person not voting. Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson have both, though, publicly said no. And, Danny, it's been interesting to see how they've been portrayed coming out of being as vocally against the CBA as they have been.
I'm not sure why fans specifically feel that, oh, it's easy for you guys to say because you've already made your money. It seems like a weird reaction to me because they're the guys that have benefited most from the existing system, and they're trying to affect change in the overall distribution of profits from it, which actually the number of people that it will help is more along the lines of the rank and file. I mean, that's generally how things have worked. So it's a little puzzling to me to see how some of the more affluent players, the more richly rewarded players, are actually the most militant about going against it, and they're characterized as being selfish.
Should we fall in line if we were one of these players with Russell Wilson, with Aaron Rodgers, or maybe should we fall in line with Marquise Pouncey, who is driving a car shirtless and going on a rant on his phone? DJ, can we place this clip? This is one of the more impressive rants that I've heard in a while.
I vote no. Our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that all that. They ain't looking out for the best of the players. And if y'all want my vote, the Pouncey Twins vote no. And if any player or any one of our teams, if y'all heard for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team, stand the f*** up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down.
I appreciate the union solidarity. Every union needs some goons. And the Pouncey brothers, I believe, fit that category in the NFL of being, if you need some heads thumped, you call in the Pouncey brothers to take care of that. Yeah, that was certainly a more visceral expression of union solidarity.
Always on brand, the Pounceys.
Yep.
Always on brand.
Yep, solid. Yeah, there you go. If you need rent money, call them.
What to watch for.
Former Seahawks quarterback Trevon Boykin, his post-football life has been fairly sad and dangerous. He's been sentenced to 3 years in prison after pleading guilty of charges from a physical assault in 2018 of his girlfriend. That was the incident that precipitated his departure from Seattle. He had also been involved in several different incidents, one while still in college, an altercation at a nightclub that prevented him from playing in his team's bowl game, and there was subsequently where a car crashed into a bar. At the very least, it appears that Trevon Boykin has some serious issues with alcohol, and definitely the fact that he's now sentenced to 3 years, and I believe he has to serve a year in jail for the physical assault of his then-girlfriend.
What was your impression of him when he was here with the team?
He seemed fine.
You never know. That's the sad thing about this.
No, you don't. You definitely, when it comes to players, deciding what is a youthful indiscretion. When he got arrested at the bar prior to his team's bowl game, I think TCU was playing in the Alamo Bowl. He was for striking a bicycle cop. Separating a youthful indiscretion from something that is revealing of a deeper, I don't even want to call it a character flaw, because when you're talking about physical violence against a partner, against a girlfriend, or whether an incident like that is a sign of somebody who doesn't have control. And really, really, yeah, it's just sad. I don't feel bad for him. I feel really bad for his then-girlfriend. That is what to watch for. Now we get to the Professor John Clayton with the Morning Drive here with Indianapolis.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, we've got a vote today happening with the NFLPA, all of the players voting on it. Do you have any inkling about which direction they're gonna go?
I still think it has a chance, but the vote's going to pretty much take about 2 weeks. So what they've done now, they're going to continue under the current plan, which of course means starting today, you can do a franchise tag and a transition tag. And then, of course, if the vote does pass, then you have to give up one of those two. But it's going to go probably too close to the start of the season. Now, again, what's coming up next is going to be a union vote that's also going to be involving who's going to be the next president of the union. And that comes up at the beginning of next month. So this is an interesting time. But, it looks like to try to put the 1,900 people voting together is going to take a couple weeks. So it's going to be right down to the wire to see if this thing is going to pass or not pass. And today's going to be interesting because what's going on is that at 11 o'clock Eastern time, the agents have their annual meeting and mandatory meeting with the Players Association. And it was one that happened yesterday with some select agents. And, of course, it was a lot of shouting, yelling, all those different things because a lot of the agents don't like the deal. And it's even going to be more vocal today.
Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson were very public in their opposition to it. And also, you got Maurkice Pouncey ranting about it while shirtless. Do you get the impression that maybe a agreement that could have been close is perhaps now actually further away from happening?
No, the agreement's done. I mean, the agreement's been done for 3 weeks. It's a matter, is it going to be accepted? And that's now up to the players. Because, again, there's not any negotiation. Because remember, this after a 10-month negotiation, each side, and again, we're talking about not the players, but the union and the NFL reached an agreement. And of course, the only thing that happened on Tuesday night is that they met and basically the idea that, to try to express the urgency of accepting this deal, the only thing that the owners did was take away that $250,000 max for the 17th week. They threw that out, but the agreement's done. It's just now, is it going to be voted through?
Why do you think the more affluent players, the guys with the bigger contracts, tend to be the ones who are most opposition to ratifying and voting for the agreement, John?
Because they're older and their bodies have taken the beating from the early years. Because what you're looking at is that, if you're going to be a player in your rookie contract, whether you're drafted or undrafted, you may not care about this. And, of course, the one thing that DeMorris Smith, was try to take care of them as best they could. Give them the potential of a 25% raise in base salary. Give them more benefits. Give them this. Give them that. But also the guys who have been in the league, the Russell Wilsons, the Maurkice Pounceys, they've been through this, and their bodies are older. And they realize, hey, 17 games is too tough. And so now what it comes down to, do you take care of, do the masses vote for this at the resistance of the guys who have been around the longest? And of course, what could end up happening is that, the union, it's not the union of players who are the younger guys may say, hey, wait a second, you've got your money. I haven't gotten mine. And here's a chance for me to get more money. And if I say, I'll be willing to play that extra game. So really what it comes down to, do you go with the elite or do you go with the masses?
Seems like we're hearing something new about Tom Brady every single day, and yesterday. It was that Jeff Darlington of ESPN reporting on air that Tom Brady has told people close to him that it is, quote, not happening, end quote, in New England, and that he expects to go somewhere else to continue his playing career. What do you make of that comment?
It's just an opinion, and of course, it's one that may be valid, may not be valid, because what the one thing I think we're now starting to see, because the one story that came out today is that there's not been one bit of conversation with contracts with Tom Brady and the Patriots, and that's not because Tom Brady's not willing to listen. It's just basically because they've not made an offer yet to do this, and so what it looks like is going to happen. This is going to go to the March 16th. The 17th two-day period where you can have legal tampering. And that means, you know, Tennessee, Tampa Bay, Indianapolis, Los Angeles Chargers, Las Vegas Raiders, you know, they can all come in and visit with Tom. But if nothing is done with the Patriots by the 18th, then you know he's gone. The reason is, you know, he's got 2 years of proration on his contract that's there. And so what they would have to do is move up, you know, 3.75. So they have 6.5 million of dead money. And if they don't get a deal, you know, then they are saying goodbye to him. So this one just goes down to the wire. And, you know, I still think ultimately they get something done, but he is going to listen to what other teams have. And if it's going to be for more, or if it's even going to be something that they're not even offering in New England, then he's gone.
First, I want to start keeping a scorecard of what different reporters are reporting. So we have Jeff Darlington down for Brady has told people close to him it's not happening. That's going to be I'll search because I want to keep an accounting of all of the different strange sourced weird. Here's what's happening that I don't think anybody knows. The second part is I very firmly now know what I want to happen with Tom Brady. I want Belichick to make the most Belichickian move, which would be to cost cut with the quarterback. I want them to decide they can go with someone like Marcus Mariota, and it's going to be the ultimate triumph of, hey, our system can win. I want Brady to go to, I don't know, whether it's the Chargers, the Raiders, or wherever, and I want him to absolutely light it up. Like, that's what I want to happen. I want the Patriots to endure maximum pain, and I think that that's the priority. Because initially I thought, like, I want Brady to stink too, just because they've all won too much and they shouldn't win as much as they do. And, like, nope, I think I'm going to go for the maximum pain inflicted on New England. So I want them to choose to move on from Brady in the most disrespectful way possible, and then I want Brady to shove it straight up their nose, John. That's what I want.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like that because, you know, what you don't understand is that, what I don't know if Bill understands it or whatever. It's like, you know, the two of them together have worked so well. And of course, you know, they've won 9 AFC championship games. They've won 6 Super Bowls together and they each cover for each other. You know, like for example, if Bill Belichick doesn't do well in the off season, you know, Tom Brady keeps them in the mix just like they did last year. Now they did lose in the first round of the playoffs, but that's mainly because they starved him for talent. I mean, you know, the best tight end that the Patriots had was Jacob Hollister and he was in Seattle. Because they had nothing left. I mean, the 3 tight ends that remained caught less passes combined than Hollister did, and Hollister didn't get on the field until October. And so, one of the things that you've seen Brady do through the years, he takes 70 cents on the dollar because he's got the money to be able to do that with his wife. And it's like, okay, you go out, I'll give you more money to get guys. And a lot of times he didn't go out and get guys.
I do think, though, John, that if you watched him play last year, there were some real signs that he's just not the same player that he used to be. And you could actually see it towards the end of that Super Bowl run that they had a couple of years ago. And I'm curious as to what they'll do, because I do think for Bill Belichick, he probably looks at this and he thinks to himself, if the guy's not playing the same way, why should I be paying him $30 million a year?
Yeah, that's true. But I think what you can see is the reality is that, okay, who are you going to replace him with? And I think the 2 main replacements are Andy Dalton in a trade and Marcus Mariota in free agency. And you put either one of those two, what's your best expectations? I mean, yeah, you might win a division, but more than likely you're going to be battling Buffalo because now Buffalo has a legitimate chance of catching you. Because at least with Brady, and it's been that way all along, you win the division. Well, right now, with Mariota or Dalton, I can't guarantee they'll win the division.
Professor, we always appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
We look forward to talking to you tomorrow. That is the Professor John Clayton. You can hear him from 10 to noon on the John Clayton Show. Coming up next, we've got a vision of the future. Julio Rodriguez, 19-year-old guy who I can't get over how big he is. He sits down with us next here from spring training.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It's Danny and Gallant, and we are joined here at Mariner Spring Training by Julio Rodriguez, who is in his first big league camp. How's it going, man?
It's been really good. It's been really fun, to be honest, being around all these guys, learning a lot, trying to improve my game as much as I can. It's been really, really fun.
I imagine, too, with Jared here. And you and Jared are really close, right?
Yeah, we are. We definitely are.
What's that relationship been like? How did it start? How did you guys first meet each other? And how has it blossomed from there?
This is the best spot because we literally met over there. You know what? That man was walking over there. We literally met there. He was there, like, stretching, doing some early work, I think, because he just first got here. So I was in the cage, I think. So I was walking over. I was like, this guy looks like Jared Kelly, the guy that just got traded. I wanted to introduce myself. I was like, hey, what's up, bro? And he started, I just shake his hand, I think. I said my name. But at first, he was trying to talk, like, Spanish to me because he didn't know if I knew, like, really good English or not. And whenever I started talking English, he was like, oh, my God, like, what did I do? Yeah, he always says that. He always says that.
How was his Spanish?
He just say hola.
Hola.
Yeah, that was basically
¿Cómo estás? He didn't even get that far?
Nah, he didn't get that far. Because whenever he said hola, I said, what's up? I was like, he was like,
he was probably really relieved.
Yeah, I was like, oh. Yeah, so we start from there, and then we start, like, in the same team, like, close locker rooms. So we just click. I feel like that was basically it because, you know, two young, talented guys chasing the same dream around the same age. It's just, like, perfectly for us, like, to be around more, to have more time to hanging out. We like different stuff, and we are alike in some stuff that we like. So we like to play video games. We like to go out and eat. We like to watch sports sometimes. So we like different and the same stuff sometimes. So we can be out there, like, playing video games, like, the whole day sometimes whenever we have time. We can go out and eat after the practice. We just like a lot of stuff. We just like to do a lot of stuff together.
That's awesome.
What's your favorite video game? What's the game you guys
play? We play a lot of Fortnite together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone's still on that.
Yeah. Do you play that?
I played it. I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible at it. Are you really good?
Yeah. I can tell you that. I'm better than Jared, though. he can tell you that. He can tell you that.
Okay, other things. What's your guys' favorite food then? Like, where do you guys like to
go? We go a lot to Cheesecake Factory, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we always get a pass over there.
Such a big menu.
That's a lot to eat over there.
Have you ever gotten the same thing twice?
I think three times, I think.
Really?
Like, three times, actually.
Okay, so you found, like, you found a favorite dish that you keep going back to. What is it?
Yeah, it's just, we always get, like, spaghetti and meatballs. Mm. We just like the spaghetti and the meatballs. It's just great over there.
We're talking to Julio Rodriguez. Take me back to how you ended up being signed by the Mariners, because you signed at 16 years old mm-hmm. in the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. How did they find you?
So everything started, I think, when I was like 14, actually, because in the Dominican, you, like, tryouts before you get signed. So I was doing, like, a lot of tryouts since at such a young age. So they signed me, and they felt I had talent, you know. I was 14 at that time, and they just had my talent. At that moment, I was just enjoying baseball, like, to be honest. There's, like, some guys that would be, like, worried about making it to the big league or something like that. I was just enjoying the game and trying to learn as much as I can. So I did some tryouts with the Mariners, too, and the field I used to train in Santiago, not in Boca Chica, because all the complex are in Boca Chica. That's the capital of the country. So I did some tryouts with them, and then around, when it was getting closer to July 2nd of 2017, I did my last tryout with the Mariners. It was like around January, February, that area. So it was really good. It was a pretty good tryout. And then my agent at that time, he just told me, like, hey, you know what? You're going to sign with the Mariners in July 2nd. I was like, wow. Like, I was really happy that I needed to run that after. I remember, like, right now, I wasn't sleeping, and then he woke me up. with one of my friends, and he was like, my friend was like, "Hey, Kigo is the guy that used to train me. Kigo wants to talk to you." And I was there. We were talking. Like, he asked me, like, "What team do you like? Would you like to sign?" I was like, "Well, I was in the Mariners. I felt really good over there. I feel like the people there, the players. Like, I feel like really, really comfortable over there." He was like, "I'm glad that you like that team because that's the team you were gonna sign with." I was like, "Are you not kidding?" I was like, "Are you being real for real right now?" Like, oh my god! I needed to run that afternoon after that. As I told you, and I did like 5 laps, literally full speed. I didn't get tired. I didn't get tired at all. That's when I found out. But whenever I signed that paper on July 2nd, it was a really special moment for me. Like, I cannot even explain it. Like, it's just the first step of your biggest dream in your life. So that's how I can put it into words. Like, the first step in your biggest dream in your life. So it was a really cool experience for me.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What do you love about baseball? Like, what draws you to the sport?
I mean, I love everything about baseball, to be honest. Just being out here competing, having fun. Like, I feel like baseball always keeps you out as a kid. That just keep it simple. Whenever you're a kid, you try to enjoy everything you do. Like, even if you're just playing with your little cars with other friends. So I feel like baseball always keep me, like, having fun. Since I was, like, a kid. So I always been loving the game. My dad also put me into the game since I was, like, really, really young. I've been always around bats, baseball, glove. So I really started loving the game since I was, like, really young. But what I like to do the most is hit. Mm-hmm. That's what I enjoy the most, to be honest.
Just crushing the ball?
Yeah, as I told you, I love everything about the game. Competing, everything, being with my friends. But hit? They're just a glass apart.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
A-Rod.
A-Rod?
Yeah, it was one-man show. Like, it was unbelievable. So, it was him.
A-Rod, David Ortiz. I mean, there's...
Yeah, there is such a good name. So you can tell I can tell right now that I was to watch. But A-Rod just was the top of the league.
He used to do so many things, yeah. He was really impressive.
Yeah, he was.
When you get here in your first big league camp, what's been sort of the biggest surprise for you so far?
My biggest surprise, I feel like in the locker room, like how they are. Like, I didn't know like the team was this close, mm-hmm. So it kind of surprised me because they were like really, really close. It was like a family. If you are in there, you will feel like you are in the family. I feel like that really surprised me. I really like about this team. So, no, everything besides that, you know, is baseball. Big league, minor leagues, always baseball, same game. But that really surprised me, like, how close this team is, like, because we are all young. And it's really fun to see in the clubhouse that union that we all got.
Yeah. I've been waiting, and this is going to be, it's probably the most important question to me, for me. You got new Nike jerseys? For the Mariners, so I've been waiting to get a new Nike jersey, and I'm not sure what number to get on it. I know the name that I'm going to get on the back, which is J-Rod Show. I don't know about the, like, what number should I put on it, though? The 4-4?
Yeah, you got it. 44 right there.
So is that because you like 8, and that adds up to 4-4 adds up, or is it the number 44 is your favorite?
Behind that, it was the first number like I have ever got as a professional.
Uh-huh.
And whenever I put it on my back, I was like, this number feels good on me. So I had a good feel for it. I played my first game as a professional, like, not like a regular game, like in season, but it was like instructional league. Mm-hmm. The Dominican, it was with the 44. And I'm telling you, whenever I put it on my back, I was like, this number like really feels good on me. I just wanted to keep it in history with it.
You're not worried that if I wore a 44 with J-Rod Show on it that I'm not cool enough? I mean, because I'm kind of an old dude with gray hair.
No, I would love it.
Are you sure?
Send me a picture. I would post it on my Instagram.
I'll do that. I'll make sure I do that. We got anything else for Julio?
Look, I think we're going to have to do the same thing. How about we get matching jerseys? Can we do that, Danny?
No. I said it first. No, we're not going to do matching things.
You got
it first. You can pick Kelenic, maybe.
Okay, fine. I'll do Kelenic. I'll be the Kelenic side of things.
All right.
You might have gotten the short end of the stick there because you got the old frumpy guy and he's younger and more.
No, I'm good. Love is love.
I'm going to get the combination one. The hybrid.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, mine will be the coolest.
Julio, we're really grateful for you taking the time.
All right,
seriously,
thank you, guys.
It's really fun to watch you, and all of Seattle's really excited.
We're really excited.
Thank you, guys, for real.
It's Danny and Gallant from Spring Training, which is brought to you by Alaska Airlines with nonstop flights daily from Seattle to both Tucson and to Phoenix. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at how bright this Mariners' future is, and, well, that guy we just talked to, Julio Rodriguez, is a huge part of it.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're going to talk about Seahawks base defense, nickel usage. I want to pause before we do that, though. I loved interviewing Julio Rodriguez.
He was so fun. This has been my favorite part of spring training thus far, being here and getting to see this 19-year-old kid who really seems extremely mature. He does not sound or come across as a 19-year-old at all.
Does not stand like a 19-year-old at all.
He stands like a giant.
We're going to talk to Kyle Lewis at 8:30, and you'll hear his impression of Julio as well. When you see a player like that, and it's not just that we know he's one of the top prospects, not just in the Mariners organization, but in baseball. He's 19 years old. I would bet he'll either start out in single A. He could start in double A. He was a little bit behind Kelenic last year because of a wrist injury, but he started yesterday. He went 0-2. He struck out once. But when you see someone whose story is kind of underway, and you talked, the thing that struck me most was when he talked about that moment of signing with the Mariners and having that be the first step toward his dream. And there are so few people that get. Can you imagine being able to identify, like, here's the moment I took the first step toward my dream, where I knew that my dream was possible, and then you see him, and it's. His dream isn't just possible now. His dream is kind of expected within the Mariners. And to see there's a spark in his eye, and it's I hope that came across on the radio. It was so fun to talk to him.
I think it did because, really, I kind of wanted to talk with him some more. I feel like we could go with him for a really long time. And, I mean, think about this. He's a 19-year-old kid. He was in the Dominican Republic not too long ago. And, I mean, I'm just impressed by how quickly he's been able to pick up English. And I mean, like, speaking with Jared Kelenic as well, like, that first interaction that they had with one another. And he's like, he just goes to Jared, like, sup, man. And I like that these two are going to be holding each other accountable. I think it's going to be a really dynamic duo. And I'm really excited to see both of them actually play at the major league level. Because hearing from him, he just strikes me as somebody who is going to make it happen.
And I do want to give the shout out for him being able to speak English because it makes me realize how stupid I am.
Exactly.
Like, my monolingual, like, you speak English? And right. Here he is conducting an entire interview at age 19 in a language that he's learned. It's really awesome.
And as someone who books a lot of these, I talk to a lot of the players beforehand. You know, a lot of the time it's an obligation and it's not part of their practice. They don't. You know, they're here to bat, and they're here to warm up, and they're here to work on drills and stuff. And he hung around during that entire break.
He was
break.
Happy to be there.
And after we were on the off the air, he hung around and talked about NBA basketball
yeah.
with you guys.
Loves
you know?
Giannis, loves the Lakers,
right.
loves LeBron. Yeah.
That's the big guys.
He does. It was very, very awesome. So hope everybody enjoyed that. We're going to talk to Kyle Lewis. That's coming up at 8:30. Pete Carroll made an observation yesterday, and I think I finally figured out the problem with their third down defense. I think I've finally figured out the problem with their third down defense. Here's what Pete said in response to questions about kind of how often they stayed in base and kept three linebackers on the field.
Well, the numbers worked out pretty well, John. The numbers worked out well versus the three wide receiver stuff. They were the best we've had in a number of years. What it did, it forced our opponents out of and away from that some. And we saw more of other stuff. We didn't play as well against the other stuff. And so we're disappointed that we weren't able to hold up as well as we would like to in our base defense versus other base looks. We did pick up an advantage on the other aspect of it, but we need to. So it's a big area of us for us to develop.
So you solved it. You solved what was going on.
The issue is not Seattle not having enough defensive backs to defend three receiver sets. The issue was Seattle's third down defense had problems when the other team stayed in a base look, which is usually two tight ends or two running backs. It's usually either what they call a 12 or a 21 personnel, where you've only got two receivers on the field. That's where they had the most problems. So it's counterintuitive, and we've been looking at it and saying, oh, Seattle had too many linebackers on the field, and they weren't fast enough to defend other teams going in three receiver sets. Pete just said their numbers against three receiver sets were pretty good. They were actually better. The reason the third down defense was a problem and it wasn't good is because those linebackers didn't do well when they had a conventional, a less explosive, when
against
you only
tight
had
end.
Two receivers.
Right. Yes. You would think against the tight end that this linebacker group would be able to cover those guys. It just wasn't the case. And I do wonder about what happens next season as these guys get a year older, if that potentially gets worse, if they find themselves in those situations. But I was just glad, Danny, to finally hear Pete answer that question and not be annoyed when he answered it. And I can understand why you get mad when people like us are asking him questions about defenses and why you're using a specific type of personnel. But for a lot of people, they have been wondering what was going on out there and why there weren't more times that guys like Ugo Amadi or other nickelbacks weren't on the field. Because we saw this guy going into the year. We saw what a freakish athlete he is and how explosive Amadi is, and that he feels like someone that could be a playmaker. Maybe he's a very poor man's version of Tyrann Mathieu, best case scenario, and we just didn't see him out there ever.
What do they plan to do next year? Pete continued in talking about, will they use more nickel defense next season?
Could be. Yeah, that depends on the people, you know. Remember that Michael Kendricks was a really extraordinary player, and if Michael comes back and he's raring to go and he puts himself back in that spot, then he gives us that flexibility. We will certainly use that some because it was effective for us, but it's going to depend on the guys. And Ugo Amadi played well at the nickel spot last year, did a good job late in the year. We need to see him through camp in all aspects of it. He did not have to play a lot of early down stuff in nickel because we play base. So that's yet to be determined as we go. There's a couple other guys we have in mind at this point from our roster that will compete there too to give us different style players there. Because that position allows you, you can use a guy that can be effective in a run, he can be a zone player or a man player, or he can be a blitzer. You know, there's a lot of things that happen on that crucial spot there. And so we're going to take a shot with a couple other guys. We'll let you see that as it unveils later.
What I don't understand is if the problem was against base defenses, or against base offenses, if the problem with using the base defense more frequently was against offenses that were with just two receivers and generally two tight ends, why does the nickelback matter as much? That's the thing I'm trying to wrestle with. That would mean that either you're unable to cover a tight end over the middle, or that your cornerbacks are the liability on third down defense, right? Like, it's one of those two things that's a problem. If it's not that, hey, your linebacker's getting matched up on a wide receiver and he can't deal with it, well, maybe we'll ask Brock to dive into this, but he's got some other things, starting with why Russell Wilson has come out so strongly against the current CBA proposal. That's next on Blue 42.